and gentlemen, and welcome to the Sunday edition of Warrior Connection. This is your host, Doug Rocky, and we've had some incredibly interesting shows over the last few weeks, and we're going to continue in that same vein. Today's kind of a catch-up, and we're going to have a discussion on NBC, WMD, an update on some different things that are happening. Denise, have you been able to join us tonight?
Yes, I am here, Doug.
And do you have some updates on what's happening in Washington, D.C., and with the casualties that you could share with us?
Well, I think the update is that the VA, what I'm focusing on now and what I hope others start focusing on is that we need education to these health care providers. Now, there's been one educational symposium that was done out in California, and they've had another one coming up shortly. And this is interesting that they had one, I'm looking at the date here, but they had one several months ago, and it had some of our leading researchers speaking out, like Dr. Dane Cook out of Wisconsin, Dr. Linda Chow of University of California, San Francisco. We had Stanford University speaking, and this is the type of thing that we need. But we don't need it just out at Palo Alto at one of the war-related illness centers. We need it to be brought on videotape out to the Internet, loaded up on YouTube. That would be a suggestion I have for the VA, is start loading up these presentations they give at the VA Research Advisory Committee on Gulf War Illness, plus any presentations that they are doing through the war-related illness. Now, I've heard that they've gone out and started educating healthcare providers. And we need to have feedback from the veterans in the different VAs. We need them to go and try to get information from the healthcare providers. If they had anybody from the war-related illness, come visit and do symposiums for them. If there's videotapes that have been made available for them, the providers, because this is really, really needed, because there's a lot of research that's gone on that I see there's a break from what we find in research and then what the healthcare providers are aware of so that they can start thinking in broader means. Let me give you an example. Dr. Reza Jani, he's an expert, you know. He had a lab out in California, Immunoscience Lab, and he did a lot of the immune function testing. And if you go in and do a search for him on the PubMed line, you'll see where he's been going with it. And he talked, you know, several years after he did a study that he presented to the Congress back in November of 93, and then he presented it to the Presidential Advisory Committee in several places, looking at the changes in the immune system in the Gulf War vets. And what we're looking at is that it looks like whatever exposure did this or combination thereof, that we have a chronic inflammatory type situation that is altering our immune functions in our body. But these are very specific tests that are not done routinely at the VA. And what this leads to in some of the articles, if you follow along in Dr. Reza Jani's whole series of articles that he does, and then if you put it together with what the VA Research Advisory Committee has looked at, they presented about, you know, like the Treg cells, which is involved in the immune system. Where does this lead us? It leads us to looking at autoimmune disorders. You know, we have a chronic inflammatory status impacting us in our immune system. Our immune system is not a healthy immune system. It's not doing what it normally does to keep viral patterns in check. When that happens, your viral patterns are reactivated, and you get kind of a chronic inflammatory infection type process going on. And that's why we have the ups and downs that we see, that we flare, it goes back down, it flares, it comes back up. It's, you know, constant. And what they've talked about is whatever hit our body, the cause of fact is probably gone, but it stimulated our body into these abnormal responses. And what we need to do is really push for education of the doctors. Now, you know, I was a nurse, master's degree, and Gulf War veteran, and this is what I see, is that there's a disconnect going on information flow to the doctors, and therefore they're kind of left in the dark. And we all know the VA system is overloaded with patients. You may have an appointment. What's your normal appointment list, Doug? And yours is longer because you keep at them. But the normal appointment may be 15, 20 minutes?
If you're lucky, I mean, they're scheduling at 10 to 15 minutes.
Right.
And what I'm finding out, I mean, in our own case, in our own team's case, and right now, I mean, we were supposed to have one of the foremost experts in NBC WMD and emergency medicine in the battlefield join us tonight, Sergeant First Class retired Rollo Dolph, but he's too sick to join us because of this immune system response that's just ripping his body apart. And the 10 or 15 minute appointment is inadequate to even get what I call is a primary or secondary history since the last appointment.
And they have to kind of focus on your chief complaint and try to deal with that. That's what a normal doctor does, whether it's a VA or a civilian. And what's lacking here is the flow of information to them in a way that they can get it and use it. And so, you know, I'm constantly giving resources, and they're medical, and sometimes they're technical, and sometimes you can kind of, if you're not medical, you can kind of get the gist of it, okay? What I'm recommending is that the VA does do more videotapes. Put them up on YouTube. You know, not just on the VA system, but put them on YouTube and let people share, just like the chronic fatigue doctors do. You can learn a lot. And there's interviews by Dr. Klimas, Dr. Broadbrook. She had an excellent series on YouTube that I've put out there on Facebook for people to watch. And it may look at just chronic fatigue patients, or then, like Dr. Klimas has an interest in Gulf War and has done research projects on it. So you've got to look and listen to these. And I would encourage people to download the articles from the PubMed, the abstracts, the links to these video recordings. Provide them to your doctor. It's kind of like I'm encouraging the VA to do something up top. But if we approach it from both ends, have the VA really identify that this needs to be done and do more, okay?
I think
get it out on videotape. Then have the patient downloading and printing this off, take it into the doctor. The doctors are stressed time-wise. They don't have the time during the day to go look up this stuff. But if you can focus and give them a couple of references each time you go in of a videotape that may take them an hour, but they can speed through it, okay? Or an article from PubMed, a published journal looking at the problems, then we're attacking it from the top down, the middle, top down and then bottom up. And the other thing is we need to do the same thing for how to translate this into the VA claim system, because you may, you know, have gone to a civilian doctor and gotten advanced testing, but the people dealing with VA claims are not medical on the whole. They're not a doctor. They're not a nurse. They are people that have been trained in claims. So they really need to kind of, you know, extra stuff to guide them through. And one of the things is you can't really claim Gulf War illness. You've got to claim, like, chronic fatigue and show them the background in your charts and your medical records and document it. So there is a need for an education there. That is some of the stuff that's missing. That's what's just irritating the vets to no end, that they can't get their claim through, that they go to the doctor at the VA, and, you know, they have 15 minutes and, you know, look at your chief complaint type thing. And the doctors are kind of in the dark. You know, it's not their fault. They weren't trained in it. Those of us that have been out there 21 years have realized that there's lack of training of what they need to be looking at, what tests they need to be doing. There's been a block for 21 years. If you were up in D.C. following the hearings that we've had, when we have to go to the Hill because the VA is not doing right, follow the Presidential Advisory Committee, follow the PSOB, you know, follow all these things, you will see that the battle that we have waged, the handful of Gulf War vets that have been directly involved in trying to help, not themselves, but the whole population of Gulf War veterans that are ill, is that we've had to fight them, because when we came home, they wanted this to be stress and PTSD for whatever reason. You know, and you and I have got all the reasons in the world of why they haven't done it right. It may be a cost factor, geopolitical, reputations on the line, the whole works, okay?
But I think that
they wanted to write it off as stress. Now, what the battle has been for the leaders in the Gulf War veteran community has been to say, no, this is not PTSD or stress, although you can get those symptoms interweaved with the whole situation, and you may have some true cases of PTSD, but don't misdiagnose and put it all on PTSD and stress. You do have a stress response that will alter immune and everything else. I mean, part of my thesis when I went for my master's dealt with stress response. So I am familiar with that. But we have physical damage that is making us more subjected to having autoimmune disorders that we've seen, cardiac problems that we've seen, the blood coagulation factors. We have a multi-system response in our body that has been altered. It is a complex illness, and what we've had to do is fight the powers that be up at the very top. This is not the doctors, but at the very top of the policy to admit that this is real damage from real exposures. Now, we're getting there. They started using the words, it's real, okay? But they still haven't taken it totally in to change the way that they're treating Gulf War vets, being health care and educating the doctors, be it training the rating officials. I mean, they're very good at injury. You know, if you've got an amputation, if you've had an injury to your spine, you know, injury is different from these illnesses. And we would have thought they'd be further along with Agent Orange. They're catching up with it with Agent Orange. But we're still down the list. Now, that needs to change. And we have to talk about how to change that. And the last thing I'm going to say before I give you time to talk, Doug, is the chronic fatigue patients, civilians that have been exposed 20, 27 years, some of these people have been bedridden. They've been unemployed, some very educated people in that group, PhDs and everything else in that group, that got exposures, whatever, that got them sick. They've battled the same as we have. They don't have access to VA. They have to find doctors that will help them, that may, you know, be more informed on the chronic fatigue. They go maybe to 20 doctors until they find somebody that, you know, is paying attention and starting to specialize in that area. And then they have to go fight for their Social Security. They have less benefits than we do. And I see a lot of cohesiveness from that group. And one of the things that happened is one of their patient advocates went out there to a rally where President Obama appeared. She presented him a letter, got him talking, and she got a response from him. Now, we have to be aware that politics, you know, they'll do anything in an election year, okay? But he responded. And he named people at the White House to be in touch with the NIH and the Health and Human Service, which deals with the chronic fatigue people, to really follow up and try to get this elevated in priority at the NIH. He wrote a letter, and he has had her contacted by phone by people at the White House. They are coordinating it. hey, we don't know how to go. I mean, the election's coming up. He may be out in January. He may not be able to do anything. But as that person going to a rally and getting a few minutes of his time with a letter, there was follow-up done. That's an impact. I don't care if it's Mickey Mouse as president, okay? That is the kind of activism that everybody needs to do, you know, and trying to get this out. They had TV coverage of it. They've had newspaper coverage of that occurrence. You know, it gets public media awareness out there again for that group of patients. And so we've got to think about how to be our best advocate. And instead of being sick and fighting the system, you know, how do you get out of it? You become an advocate in any small way you can, whether it's educating your congressman, your senator, your VA health care provider, writing letters to the VA secretary, we copy to the president, or write the letter to the president, we copy to the VA. And we need to unify our efforts and say, we want our doctors educated. We want them to have videotapes available for them to learn. We want a mandatory continuing medical education. And it cannot be just stress-related. It's got to really educate them on looking at the total multi-system problem here so that they're better able to deal with us.
One of the things that I think in all the stuff you said is extraordinarily important, first-hand experience with myself and our team members over this last week and then others that have just came back, okay? What we are learning, what I learned, is the doctors and nurses assigned to our care do not even have the primary documentation or internal reports either from the Department of Veteran Affairs or the Department of Defense confirming the exposures and the physiological effects. They don't even have the primary reports, say, for example, from CHPM confirming the physiological effects from the burn pits. We were able to get a hold, thank God, a colonel up in Washington, D.C., a copy of the internal memo from the Department of the Army confirming the physiological effects from the burn pits current time, which goes back all the way back to Desert Storm because we had hazmat and burn pits going on them too. And they don't even have the information. The other thing that I encountered, and this is totally, totally frustrating, is the continuing medical education you talk about is absolutely critical. What I'm finding out and what I've learned through my own experience and attempts at doing continuing medical education, actually putting together programs for the Army or the Department of Defense or National Academy, whatever they were doing, or Congress, wherever we're doing it, police and fire, is the doctors and the nurses aren't availing themselves of the time to do it. They're so swamped with patients during the day that they don't have any time at all during the day to take it. And what I'm finding out, there's a whole new attitude change, a whole new thing from when you and I started emergency medicine, what, man, it's over 30 years ago, Denise. They don't do it in the evening. Once that bell rings, that's the end of their day. And their nighttime hours is completely separated from anything else. So the whole thing of professionalism, continuing medical education that we were brought up with, that we have taught and we had, and expect people to do, is not happening. I provided incredible information to my own nurse here recently. And when I talked to her the other day, it's been 3 weeks, she had never even looked at it.
Yeah.
Primary information directly related to my own care. And the same thing happened with our team members.
Well, one of the things we saw is I think they did a nationwide audit. We've gotten a few reports out from the regional offices of the errors in their dealing with the cases on the claims. And I think they did that nationally. They have not put out, I'm trying to get a report on it nationally, because we've gotten scattered reports of Texas, California, other little states, okay, at different regional offices. But we haven't gotten a total report, so I could go in and say, how's Colorado's VARO doing, and what's their error rate, and what's the problems? So I think they just did that. And what I'm hearing is a few offices, especially out in California, have even limited their work hours and taken training time. And it's almost like they've got to do that process for the claims, but they're going to have to do it for the doctors. And it's like when I was Air Force and I was flight nurse, you know, and I kept up with what was going on flying-wise. But if there was several accidents, and they had, you know, they would shut down flying for several days to retrain whatever specialty was needed, whether it was pilots, whether it was mechanics, you know, it was, hey, we've got a safety problem. We got to shut down and do massive retraining.
You know, that's
identify
a part
the problem, and you go out and you do massive retraining. And
we've done that.
That's what I think is needed.
You know, Denise, we've talked about that, and I've been involved in doing this. You and I have been involved. Our whole team has been involved in doing this stuff. But I think this is extremely important, and what I'm picking up more and more from the vets and from the family members and everybody who dealt with people we've had on our program, on the program here, the frustration levels are at the utmost. They're at the total top end.
Yeah.
Okay. And as a consequence, and this is I'm gonna make this very loud and clear. Last week we had, you know, again the discussion about PTSD and suicides. We've been talking about that over the last week.
Right.
And then here in the last on Thursday, August 16th, the Army Times story: Army faces highest monthly total of suicides.
Right.
There was a record number of 38 suicides in the month of July. That puts the numbers current time for just the soldiers at 187 for the year. That's absolutely staggering. Now, and I got to impress, and I'm again calling on the leadership of the VA, the Department of the Army, Department of Defense, within the Air Force, the Navy, Coast Guard, Marine, Public Health Service. We've got to start looking at reducing the frustration within our troops. What I'm sensing and what I'm hearing and what I'm feeling myself and what my team members are feeling, I have to understand this because it's very, very personal, is the level of frustration on trying to get care where they deny any correlation between the exposures and anything gets to be the utmost. And so this individual saying, I need care. This is what happened to me. Now, the sense that I've got and what we've been trying to get around with, when the soldier, the airman, the sailor, whatever we have, goes in for care, these guys have to understand all of us were extraordinarily healthy prior to deployment. And now we're looking at extraordinarily sick individuals that are very young or middle-aged, whatever they happen to be, but they were extraordinarily healthy before deployment, and now they are extraordinarily sick. And so all of this frustration is just building up and building up and building up into a crescendo of where people are giving up. The sense of frustration I sense when I talk to the parents of these individuals that have already committed suicide, or I talk to the individuals that are contemplating suicide, or we talk to individuals that have got into trouble in one way or another, they expected after they were sent to war to receive that mandatory, the training they need to complete their mission successfully and safely, which they haven't had. They expected good equipment to be provided to protect themselves and ensure they could get the mission done given the parameters they're about, and that wasn't done. We expected optimal medical care to be available on the battlefield. Now, we know from Desert Storm, because our team absolutely had to do this, and Denise, you've seen all the documentation on it, so you know when we're talking about reality. We knew that we didn't no longer have a combat medic, a trained combat medic, which is equivalent of an EMT basic, in each platoon. We were lucky if we had them at a company. And as a consequence, we had to put the combat lifesaver program together. And that's why I wanted to have Rollo Dolph on today and the other members of Bowers Raiders that actually goes back over 30 years together to talk about that training, the real NBC, the real WMD, the real need for, you know, understanding all the primary and secondary surveys and the care that needed to be done. Because what we're finding out, it's broke. And as a consequence, we keep hearing over and over again total frustration. Because when the soldier or the airman, the sailor, whatever they go in for care, they expect to go in and say, okay, here's my post-deployment physical assessment, DD Form 2786, 96, whatever it is. And in that form, it specifically says, what were you exposed to? Where did you serve? What did you see? Now, the VA doctor, the physician, or the nurse should be able to take that primary information and then go to all the internal reports that we've tried to provide but somehow keep hidden from them and say, okay, you were here. This is what we know what exposure is. Now, let's do the medical testing. You're coming back with a physiological effect that's linked to that. now we can provide care. What I've experienced, and again, we had this happen 4 weeks ago about, had a guy came back, I mean, burn pits, all the different exposures, the whole shebang. His other half's a registered nurse. He was an Army engineer. And he's got all the same physiological effects. And what the unit had told him was there's no physiological effects from it, and this is, again, what the Air Force has reiterated over and over and over again with the burn pits, that there is no physiological effects from the burn pits, and yet the internal memorandum, the medical directives, all of the experiences very clearly going back, for instance, you know, for years and years and years, is these physiological effects, all these complex toxicological exposures, or a synergistic relationship resulting in horrific physiological effects and psychological effects. So I think now when it comes up here in Patricia Kimmy, in her article, Army Faces Highest Monthly Total Suicides, is relating 38 suicides in July alone and 187 to date. It's totally frustration, total frustration. Now, as we go with the frustration, and this is extremely important, and again, we fight with this, and you and I, as we did with, you know, patient care and patient education, the same thing with doctor care and doctor education or nurse care and nurse education, is the individual needs to participate in their own care. They need to know what's going on. They need to get the information. And you and I have talked about ad nauseum, where what has happened is the patient is having to be the educator for the doctor in order to provide care. Now, that, to me, is just ludicrous. I mean, it should be the other way around, but that's not what's happening at all. Now, along with this, and this is a little aside here, it's extremely important to maintain a really good diet. It's extremely important, and I've had this discussion with so many we know firsthand. Ladies and gentlemen, you come back, you can't drink anymore. Alcohol is out of the question. Nicotine, smoking is out of the question. These compromise the system, the immune system, and everything, the respiratory, neurological, cardiac systems that are severely damaged or on the border of being severely damaged, where any of this thing compromises again and throws you in. Same thing with physical activity. And this is kind of a fun thing, Denise. Today I took my son and my grandson. We went canoeing and we went kayaking. Man, did we have a good time. The physical activity that you can do so simply can help you improve your lifestyle. Really, really important. Again, the same thing. What we had done, and we're looking at the end of the year, but we can continue to work on, is water aerobics, which was really, really good. So, I mean, we did all that today, and we had a really good time canoeing and kayaking. And then I have to understand, I got late, and we had an incredible meal. Sometimes, you know, when you go out for a good meal and you run out of time, boy, I had the best fish and chips I could ever imagine today at the O'Charlie's in Champaign, Illinois. And we were in limited time. Like, we got to the restaurant at about 4:45, you know, and we got the show starting here at 6. Boy, was it good. But it was, you know, how some days it just works out really good. But again, that balanced diet, the balanced meal, maintaining physical activity within what you're capable of. But we have to understand, and as you've seen, and you've seen me and our team, Denise, firsthand, and you've experienced yourself, the pain can be excruciating. And that pain cycle, once it starts, it's hard to break out. And so we're running into all of these incredible, incredible problems. But I think, and this is a shot in the dark, and you go back to Vietnam, and both you and I do, going back to the 60s and the early 70s, this total frustration that we're seeing within the military and within the families is something that has to be something done about. The military and the VA seems to tap dance around it, a personal experience. They don't want to talk about the ethics and morality of war. They don't want to talk about the total failure of the Department of Defense and Department of VA to provide the mandatory testing within 24 to 72 hours of exposure for depleted uranium. They don't want to talk about the incredible misuse of pesticides. Remember, Denise, when we wrote and we presented the report on misuse of pesticides in the military, National Academy of Sciences?
Oh, yeah.
It was years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There was a lot of people that helped us.
You know, we've had efforts early on. I know that Oklahoma tried to have a task force, you know, having the veterans and their spouses involved with communicating with the VA hospital there and, you know, having, you know, an educational series for not only the doctors, but for the vets and the spouses, and to work together, you know, on these problems. And I know we had, you know, Jim and Gina Whitcomb with their son Jason. They really worked to have a task force there. There was some effort in Iowa to have a task force. Spotted places, but, you know, in civilian life, give you an example, since I'm an old cardiac nurse and, you know, medical and surgical, the patient education and the coming together of the team, no matter if it's cardiovascular or stroke problems, you see that in civilian hospitals, and you see the gathering of education for the patients and the interaction of the team that's there, be it dietitian, be it, you know, physical therapy, you know, whatever it is. That is what's missing with, you know, the VA system to deal with things like the burn pit, the multiple exposures from the Gulf War. There doesn't seem to be that type of cohesiveness, you know, because we've had denial. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to point out to the public, to the veterans, to the spouses, that we still battle that. I mean, it was this past year that the NIH was supposed to look at treatment modalities. And so they had meetings that were open to call in and discussion, and then they have their closed meeting. But they haven't finished that. The one session had like seven presenters, five of which were all stress, total stress. And a couple of them didn't even need to be presented. They were on things that didn't need to be presented to the NIH if they're looking for treatment and all that. And so there was an uproar because veterans were on the phone to give their public comment and listen to this. And you can feel the frustration building in all these veterans. That is what we have faced for 21 years.
Well, we faced it since Vietnam.
We think we're making headway, and then they have a presentation, a whole day or, you know, whole meeting that they had, all stress-related. And we're going, okay, yes, we need, you know, some stress techniques and all that. But what's more important to all of us is for them to hear us that this physiological damage, which has a component that, you know, stress involves, but not all, you know, look at us physically, look at the immune response and what the researchers have found, you know, use that of what we have had for research. Use Dr. Rivajani's material. Have an immunologist say, okay, these are the tests that we need to have each vet have so we know where their killer cell function's at. And it's not just a Rivajani. I mean, the VA Research Advisory Committee over a year ago in Boston had people come in and talk about the immune activation system. And we've had Dr. Klimas looking at it. Why are we just having researchers looking at this instead of doctors going, oh, listen, this is what their papers show. We need to start seeing what's going on with these vets and doing the testing, the diagnostic testing that is absolutely necessary to get a handle on this.
Now, one of the things I want to important again,
a lot of that has been, you know, I walked out of the VA system. Okay, I got fed up with them when I took in about the hypercoagulation paper and begged them to start testing all the vets and to see if that was true. I mean, we had a sample study. Dr. Bach has taken it up at Minneapolis VA. But, hey, these are tests that can be done. If they have coagulation problems, then we need to be treating it. I mean, it follows. You find something, you treat it. You can't treat it until you've diagnosed it. So that's been the breakdown. And it was like, at that time, it was around 2000, okay? And it was like, my hands are tied. I had a female hematologist. She wasn't stupid. My hands are tied. When I gave her the phone numbers, the emails, to call and talk to these doctors if she had any questions, because it was a small sample study. And Dr. Bach needs to hurry up and get his study published that he's been working on. That you need to look at it and say, hey, they are finding something here. Let's take it on to the clinical area. Let's start testing them right here. Those tests are somewhat expensive. Not every VA hospital could probably do it, but they could set up labs that can do it. And find out what is really going on with these GUT4 vets. Why is their condition continuing to go downhill? It is a situation that we were hit with something, the damage was done, the body has kind of gone a little haywire. Now, we don't have the actual way to treat or cure, but we can certainly help with it by at least diagnosing it there and looking of what could we use as an FDA-approved drug to help them and be very careful and monitor them. You know, that's typical with any medicine. You put a normal patient on, you've got to take them and have their lab studies done if there's a possibility of liver problems with the drug. If it's a coagulation drug, then you've got to measure their bleeding studies and keep an eye on them. That's called monitoring after you start a drug. And I just, you know, I have a hard time comprehending that we are finding ideas that needed to be pursued on the clinical level. And there hasn't been that connection.
Well, I think the part of the thing is we have to look at the numbers. We're looking, and this, again, is not put out to the general public. And what I'm finding out, even my own doctors and nurses haven't got the epidemiology. What we have seen is during Operation Desert Storm, I had less than 1,000 actually wounded in action and killed in action during the 100-hour war or whatever it was. It ended up, you know, a couple of months. But we're now looking, as General Shinseki has totally confirmed himself, over 300,000 individuals that have applied for through the CNP
for
permanent
for
medical
Gulf
care.
That's just for the
just
Gulf
Desert
War.
Storm alone. And then what we know totally, again, General Shinseki has totally confirmed in his budget request, there we're looking at 1.3 million Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom veterans that are having serious medical problems. Now, when we look at the medical problems, and again, the post-deployment physical assessment form, which should have been done by everybody when they came back, no matter how many times
they deployed. It wasn't done for the Gulf War, and we know that, Doug.
Pardon?
We know that the post-deployment physicals weren't being done.
Correct. They're not being done.
Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom.
Correct. Now, one of the things that we look at, and again, this is part of, again, the history. You know, when we look at this stuff, and we have to understand, and I want to reiterate, and I do this with everybody I talk to when I try to give it to doctors and nurses to look through, it's not only what happened immediately, but what you need to update continuously, because the physiological effects of all these toxic exposures, and we got to put stress and PTSD and the frustration in here, all come together in a synergistic relationship. So just some of the signs and symptoms that were listed on the post-deployment physical that can happen immediately or keep coming up with the weather changes. Now, the weather changes is what's tearing Rollo Dolph apart right now. Chronic cough, runny nose, fever, weakness, and again, this is in all extremities or one or more extremity. Headaches, and the headaches are not only the migraine headaches or the ice pick headaches, all these other headaches are horrible, and they migrate around the head. Swollen, stiff, and painful joints. I mean, I'm having myself that, but we know that what we can work with is the physical activity within limits can really help reduce that. Back pain, muscle aches. Again, fibromyalgia has been extensively diagnosed throughout everybody, but that's a complex problem. Numbness or tingling in the hands or feet. This goes back all the way to Agent Orange. Again, they're redoing the criteria on the peripheral neuropathy for Agent Orange. The skin diseases or rashes. I had a recent experience where a guy came back from Iraq. His other half is a registered nurse. And we're looking at both of our rashes. He's got a current rash just started and looking at mine, and she goes, my God, they're the same thing in the same location. Okay, but this is Desert Storm to Iraqi Freedom. Redness of the eyes and tearing, and again, all of the vision problems and everything else, which are complex. I had a top-notch researcher and doctor here associated with the University of Illinois in our area in Illinois, that all of a sudden made the direct connection between the complex toxic exposures, chemical exposures, at the chemical plant down in Tuscola, Illinois, with the Desert Storm. And once she saw it, it's migrating around the eye. It's going in there. It's creating all the problems. Dimming to the vision, like the lights that were going out. We've had that stuff. Chest pain and pressure. Dizziness and fainting. All the light headaches. All the respiratory difficulties. Denise, you and I have both dealt with the respiratory problems for too many years and seen incredible problems with it. Difficulty in remembering and the memory issues. I wanted to have Rollo on today. We had an experience, and I've used this before, and he's used it as a care. We literally went into a neighborhood where we came in and turned right, and we went half a block, went two blocks, came back a half a block to a house and a friend of ours, a teacher, to recover a CB antenna for radio transmissions for, you know, the amateur radio stuff, and he was totally lost. Now, if you came in the same neighborhood and instead of turning right, turned left, went a half a block, and went down one block, that's where his grandparents lived, and he'd been there every day for 45 years, and he was lost. We're finding incredible problems with memory, and that is a very complex problem. The explosive diarrhea and constipation, again, incredible problems. We had the very first initial stuff because during Desert Storm we found out that we had incredible contamination from night soil, and therefore we had fecal contamination. And again, what have we been dealing with? The E. coli contamination on an individual who could get repeated E. coli right now, currently, and we've had that discussion over the last week. But again, when they get this stuff, again, they're offering antibiotics. Well, anybody knows with diarrhea and everything, if you start giving the wrong antibiotics or antibiotics at all, you can change the flora and the fauna and actually create worse diarrhea because it's not responsive. It's not a bacterial infection. It's a viral infection. Frequent indigestion, the vomiting, and the ringing of the ears when the weather changes. Thank God we did a lot of praying. We got a lot of rain here in East Central Illinois, but it's still a whole problem. Then you have all the psychological aspects of everything else. When we look at the things that are listed on the post-deployment physical assessment that would lead to the physiological effects that we have here, is extremely important to understand these not only happened during wartime, but Denise, as you know, when this happened to Rollo and tore him apart, what happened is in his own area he got an extensive exposure that he had not planned on from commercial applications in here in East Central Illinois. In other words, a guy flying an airplane trying to get rid of all this stuff started spreading the stuff. Okay, pesticides. So again, we got all the DEET and insect repellents. We got the pesticide-treated uniforms created an incredible problem for absorption. Environmental pesticides like area fogging. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're down in Texas right now, they're talking about Dallas, Texas, doing whole like aerial fogging for West Nile virus, and again, as we all know, when it's thoroughly documented, it's in the Regal Commission report, West Nile virus is an Army biological weapon, you know, that got out, and the fact the Army was distributing and giving it to people in other nations. Flea and tick collars. Remember when we went through the whole thing with Mike Kilpatrick to get flea and tick collars? Individuals have stopped wearing those current time and in the past. Pesticide strips, smoke from the oil well fires, again, smoke from burning trash or feces. This is your burn pits, all the vehicle, truck, and exhaust fumes. Again, we've had incredible conversations and everything else, tent heater smoke, JP and other fuels. Here we're looking at, what, carbon monoxide poisoning?
Right.
And everything, again, they need to do those arterial and venous blood gas diagnosis to find out what is happening there. Tent heater smoke couldn't have been worse. We had people get sick on that immediately in Desert Storm because we got there in December and it was mighty cold. People thought the desert would be warm, and they found out, oh my God, the desert gets cold, extraordinarily cold. All the solvents, all the paints, all the ionizing radiation. Now, the ionizing radiation is not only depleted uranium, but it's all the radioactive materials and all the equipment. The other problem we ran into when I had the captured equipment project, Denise, you've seen the report, we posted it up in various places. Again, it's in the Beyond Treason website. The stuff's up there on the grassrootspeace.org. But the ionizing radiation, we had all the equipment, but the Iraqi equipment that we destroyed had incredible levels of radioactive isotopes that were spread all over the place. Radar and microwaves, as you know, anything above 10 milliwatts per square centimeter, it's an exclusion zone for radar and microwaves. got to be real careful. What is the level and how far are you out and what are the levels? Lasers, incredible stuff. FM 8-50 deals with lasers, incredible problems. Noises. I wonder how many vets, are there any vets that do not have hearing damage? Are there any vets that do not have hearing damage? Are there any vets that have not had compromising from hearing damage up and beyond what they might get from civilian environment? And then again, we compromise again. Excessive vibrations, industrial pollution. My whole career has been dealing with hazard materials, industrial pollution, and everything else, NBC, WMD, CBR, whatever you want to call them. Industrial pollution, the acid rains and everything is incredible compromise for all this stuff. So you got zapped during the war from what was blown up or destroyed, what was used in operations or what was, you know, released there or used some other house and you get nuts. Then we got all the sand and dust. Dr. Anders Carnegie Bath, a colonel, army doctor, now in heaven, wrote the seminal paper called LS cancer disease and the sand, the dust, the contamination and everything from all of the pollution. So all this stuff gets into the sand and dust and then it's spread around. Depleted uranium. I can't even begin enough. What I'm finding out from the guys coming back, not only didn't they get the training that was mandated for depleted uranium, that they were supposed to have all three tiers of training, they didn't even know what it was until they got into it. And what I've heard over and over, and I heard again the other day, guys that were on the highway of death, they were just still there. The kids are still climbing on that stuff, still getting all the contamination and other exposures. So the Department of Defense is recognizing all these complex exposures. And from this stuff, a physician should be able to, again, from primary and secondary histories and everything else, and where the physician or the guy in the VA or DOD knows these are the physiological effects from these exposures, now we get a physician referral where we have cardiac, mental health, dental, and I want to repeat dental. The immune system is torn up. DU rips up the teeth because it's a calcium seeker and phosphorus. It takes the calcium and the phosphorus right out of the teeth, and they deteriorate. So our whole team, we find out the teeth just break off. As Rollo said, don't eat a piece of, you know, bread. One day the tooth will just break off. All the dermatitis and everything else, ENT, ear, nose, and throat, the eye problems, the family problems, are not only OBGYN and all of that stuff, but we're also looking at the psychiatric and psychological family problems. Fatigue, malaise, multisystem complaint, audiology, GI, GU, GYN, mental health, neurologic, orthopedic. What happened with Rollo on our team at the Danville VA Medical Center, his right side is bad, my left side is bad. We know what happened to us. He went down really bad. He asked the doctor, his primary care physician, Danville VA Medical Center, a couple weeks ago to refer him to orthopods because of the incredible problems in his right knee and his right side. They refused to do so, simply refused to do so. When he said, here's the correlation between, they said, well, just take two aspirin and call me in the morning. Well, when you've had multiple strokes already and you know that you have compromise in cardiac and everything else, you know they have a compromise in the entire intestinal system. Aspirin can be contraindicated. We got all of the problems with pregnancy. One of the comments in the brand new Army Times and again in the newspaper today here is the VA and everything is looking at fertility care and treatment. We get into pulmonary. One thing, personal experience, and again, you've done this, Anisha, you're a cardiac nurse, we have all this stuff. You can't give a pulmonary function test and keep redoing the test and administering drugs until you get a normal curve. We're finding pulmonary problems in these individuals for very complex reasons. And when the individual can't blow a normal curve on a pulmonary function test, that's what you're looking at, not how do you make sure that he gets somewhat of a normal curve. And then all of the other things. So again, then we got environmental, occupation, and combat mission related. When I find out most VA doctors and nurses, unless they're retired military or were in the military, very few of them were, they have no idea what a combat or mission-related idea is or concern. They don't know. But what I'm finding out is they don't have an interest in learning because of the complex ethical and moral dimensions and the fact that we're looking at well over, I think when we combine everything together for OIF, OEF, Desert Storm, well over 1.5 million individuals. They're extraordinarily healthy before they deploy, and they're extraordinarily sick. What are the implications on our national budget to recognize that? What are the implications on our political systems to recognize the true costs and the casualties for the nonsense of the wars that all came about, whether it be Operation Iraqi Freedom, which was based on chemical, biological warfare agents Iraq had, but we knew that we were already totally destroyed completely right after Desert Storm because General Schwarzkopf ordered that. Remember when you and I, 10 years after the fact, were up in Washington, D.C. for a command staff 10-year reunion? And General Horner, you and I, and General Horner sat there and talked about, oh, my God, we made an error in blowing everything up and contaminating everybody. Remember that discussion, Denise?
Yeah, and he admitted the VA was broken.
Correct.
10 years ago.
I had a congressman
over
here the other day
now.
Told me the VA is broken and totally broken and has to deal with the recognition of what has really happened and the budget. In other words, just spiraling out of control. So, I mean, it's where do we go? What do we do? How do we deal with this stuff? How do we get the patients educated? How do we get the families educated? How do we get the doctors and the nurses and the military educated? How do we get the doctors and the nurses and the VA educated such that they recognize what has happened to our military personnel and the families? I think, Denise, you had a lot of experience where we know we've had, what, cross-contamination from spouse to spouse or significant other, haven't we?
Yes.
Haven't we had incredible disease problems? I think there's some a family...
No, and that hasn't been looked at or researched at all. And, you know, there is a need there, but until we can get the primary problem taken care of the veteran, and get them realizing what's going on, they cannot focus on the other. I mean, that's just the facts. So, you know, there is a tremendous need in the VA educational processes at every VA hospital. And the only way I can see to do this is to get it all on YouTube, videotape, DVDs, and, you know, mandate the training to occur. That's the only way that's going to change the care that the veteran gets. And the knowledge base of the doctor, not hitting on the doctors because, you know, they weren't trained in poisons, exposures. You know, I went to a civilian doctor with my thyroid problem and trying to, you know, say the exposures I had. I mentioned depleted uranium. Now, this was a doctor that had been Vietnam, okay? He was a doctor for a long time. And basically said, you know, I don't want to fight with the government. and I said, well, listen, what I need is for you to do the conventional medicine, and I'll do everything else and bring you information. And, you know, I'm not really, you know, at that point I wasn't fighting for a claim. I wanted health answers and health care. And the thyroid was one of the things that I saw early on that was changing on other veterans, and it happened to me too. And, you know, so many veterans, I don't think, have been checked for thyroid problems, and chemical and radiation exposures, oh, will hit these glands. And you get that, and you get the other problems, and it just becomes, you know, where do you start first?
I think an important part of this, and again, I'm going back to how our team was formed, you know, with the best of the best scientists, engineers, and physicians. As you know, most of the physicians that were totally involved in this continued to have their doctors on osteopathy. In other words, DOs, not MDs. And what we learned is that holistic medical approach that had the incredible focus on occupational environmental medicine seemed to provide those doctors with some insight onto what is happening overall. The other thing, too, and again, we're trying to get it done with Rollo and I, is get us under the same doctor, we're providing the same care. And again, so far it's not failed because the doctors can't take any more patients. They're drowning, and
yeah,
they don't have the time. But if you have a whole team or you have a group, if you can get together and get under the same doctor, that doctor can start getting some care together and see the whole picture of what is happening. But again, what are the resources and what are the capabilities? this whole show, again, I guess we've looked at an update on things and tying things together of what is happening. I'm frustrated and I'm flustered because of the sheer numbers of vets that I'm picking up that have given up all hope. When I have my own team members start indicating that they're giving up hope because they tried to educate, they tried to inform, they asked individuals to get the information, to share it, and do the simplest medical care procedures that we taught years ago, that are ignored. Ladies and gentlemen, Progressive Radio Network, Warrior Connection, we're moving forward. We hope you enjoy the information, the education we have. Please join us. Please give them more information. Ladies and gentlemen, we have to take care of our families and our vets. Denise, thank you for everything you've done and continue to do. And ladies and gentlemen, have a good evening. Thank you again, and God bless America.